Support for Class Dismissed comes from School Status. School Status is the only K-12 data analytics platform designed to turn analysis into engagement. To learn more about how School Status can change your school district, head over to schoolstatus.com. You are listening to Class Dismissed, Episode 10, and I'm your host, Nick Ortego. A teacher tattooed his students' names on his body, but when you hear why, you may understand. Plus, we'll tell you how school administrators can make meetings more meaningful, and Amazon rolls out a new tool to turn screen time into reading time. Stay with us. Class Dismissed is the podcast that inspires educators through story. Each week we cover some of the hottest topics and news in the world of education. Plus, we speak with a guest with a bright idea for education that you can apply in your community. This week we have James Gibran. James is a teacher that found a way to replicate the Amazon River by building an 1,100-gallon aquarium in his school cafeteria. It's an extremely ambitious project, and we'll tell you how he pulled it off. Hey everybody, Nick Ortego here, and I'm joined with teacher extraordinaire Lissa Pruitt, and we have education data expert Russ Davis of School Status. Lissa, how are you doing?
I'm great.
Russ, how's it going on your end?
It's going great, man.
I guess school is right around the corner, at least maybe not for the East Coast schools, but some of the other folks are about to start back up, right?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. We have customers starting as early as Tuesday, and then we have other customers that start for 3 more weeks. So that's actually nice for our company. Typically this time of year, the day school starts for a lot of our districts, the phones just start melting. I mean, they ring nonstop and they start at 6 o'clock in the morning and they don't stop until sometimes 10 or 11 o'clock at night to kind of slow down. So we're actually okay with a staggered start. We're onboarding a lot of customers that aren't just from our kind of our core region. We've expanded into a lot of states. So we're starting to see the kind of the fruits of that labor, and that we don't just get this huge glut of folks asking for help at the same time.
It just seemed to go by so quickly. I was doing some research for the classdismissedpodcast.com, and I came across a story about how schools are planning to be closed the day of the eclipse, which is August 21st. And I was like, wow, schools are going to be, you know, back in there in late August. So I guess that's just the reality of it.
Well, it's like the bane of every administrator's existence is when they hear the words, so what do you guys do during the summer? You know, I think that's like a really common, we work. Like, that's what we do every day. Like, there's like people think that because students aren't there that somehow schools close, I guess.
Right.
And that could be further from the truth. A lot of work and a lot of planning goes in during the summer, and that's what we're a big part of right now.
Good stuff. Well, we're going to go ahead and kick off the teacher's lounge. I know Lissa's got a great story to talk about today. Lissa, what are you hearing?
Yeah, there's a teacher out there sporting some ink, some body ink going on. Joshua Murray of Avondale, Arizona, has such a cool story. He challenged some sophomores 3 years ago to work hard to graduate high school, but not just to graduate high school. He wanted each of his 28 students to receive more than $5,000, or at least $5,000, in college scholarships. And if every single one of his 28 students did that, he promised that he would tattoo all of their names on his body.
One of those things that you just kind of say.
Right.
And you don't really think that it's going to happen.
Right. And that's what I was, as you know, reading the article that was written by him. I think, you know, from an outsider, I think he probably thought, even though he wanted to encourage them and wanted to believe in them, he probably thought there's no way it's going to happen, because 12 of those 28 students spoke English as a second language. All 28 students have no one in their family that has gone to college before.
That's phenomenal.
So although it's wonderful that all of them were able to achieve the goal, it definitely was a long shot. And so
he has a tattoo, like where? It's on
like the side of his rib cage. Like, it looks Santa's list, like going down the side of his body.
Yeah, I saw this article and I first thought, all right, this guy is doing it for attention. He's going to be a little crazy or whatever. But then I started reading it and you realize that these kids did something so amazing that he had to follow through. Yeah. And he's really a great person for following through.
Yes, and he is a big part of the community, grew up in that community, went to that same school, then came back to teach at that school. And so he knew that this middle-of-the-range student population is the ones that are kind of at risk. You know, they're not the failing students And they're not the ones that are, you know, taking the AP courses. It's this middle group.
I just thought of a great idea for Russ. Let's come up with something that...
Let me just go ahead and stop you there, Nick. I'm not interested in getting any tattoos.
Well, if the school status team does something incredible, maybe Russ should get his entire staff tattooed on his ribcage.
How about if my team does something incredible, they continue to fight another day? They have employment the next day. How about that? That's kind of our expectation at school status, Nick, is you should be doing something incredible every day. So
I don't have a tattoo. Do you have a tattoo?
No, I have no ink.
Russ, you have any? You have none?
I have none.
Wow, so we're kind of losers.
Yeah, we're really boring.
We obviously were the cool kids in high school and in college, I could tell.
I thought about getting a tattoo once, and I kind of wanted to get like a squashed bug on the bottom of my foot. So like
that is stupid.
Well, it would be painful to walk around for a little while after you got it.
That sounds painful, period. I'm not into the whole permanent body modification. I mean, some people love it, and I have lots of friends with tattoos. I've just never really appealed to me.
Well, really, I'll be honest, I wouldn't mind a tattoo, but it's hard for me to commit to an image that I love that much.
You have two boys.
You know what I think, Nick? Class dismissed.
Yes.
On Lissa's ribcage.
Yes.
I think it's perfect.
This podcast will be around forever, and so should the tattoo, Lissa.
No, I was thinking
I'll pay for it, Lissa.
There you go.
No.
Let's
see how many. Let's challenge the nation. How many downloads we can get, and then I'll get a
class dismissed.
A class dismissed.
Okay.
Tattoo.
I think we can formulate that.
Yes.
And I'll let you film it.
I can't wait to hire those hackers to up our download thread.
No, I forgot. Yeah. I forgot. Never mind.
I
would track
20,000 a week if we can.
That'd be great. I think I can make that's like $6 in some countries.
God.
I think I can make that happen.
So. I forgot that Russ knows how to do stuff like
yes.
that.
Yes, no. Don't mess with the guy who knows how to write code. So Russ, what do you know? You hear anything going on in the teacher's lounge?
Well, I read an article recently. I read EdSurge every day. And for folks that are involved with educational technology, especially from the business side, but really it's just really interesting. It's a great publication, so I just wanted to get a quick plug in there for those guys. But I read an article that came through, and it's a couple weeks old, but it says, Respect Thy Time, How to Stop Calling Meetings That People Hate. And this is a particular interest to me because I hate meetings. I hate them. I spent a lot of time working for education, like for school districts directly, and then I worked for like state departments of education, and I've served on, you know, kind of federal task force and things like that. I've gone to, you know, CCSSO meetings, et cetera. Like, meetings are king in education. And so I think I've met enough in my life. Like, I've just hit my limit. There's an upper limit. It's like radiation, right?
Right.
Like, I just hit my upper limit, and I don't want to do it anymore. And so in our company, as we grow, you know, the natural tendency is for folks to meet more. And so every now and then, I will go on this meeting jihad, and I will just start clearing meetings from people's calendars and saying, like right now in our executive team, we have 7 people that serve with me. Like, I'm one of the 7 on our executive team. And they cannot call any more meetings without getting rid of a meeting. Like one in, one out.
What is it? It's like a moratorium on meetings.
That's it. Like, yeah. And really, what I did is I added up the cost of these meetings. And this article really isn't about like meetings are terrible. It's talking about why meetings are painful in education. And it's because they're sometimes not organized, or often they're not organized. And then trying to like just play who's on first to coordinate 7 or 8 people. And this article gives a lot of good hints, like doing doodle polls or mm-hmm. creating a Google Doc that has
and kind
a table.
Of dive into that real quick. Like, give a quick summary, like what a doodle poll is, it right?
Yeah, so this basically is a service called doodle.com that allows you to go through and set a group of times and send those times out to folks, and they very quickly answer the poll, and you can try to find where the times overlap. Mm-hmm. So you can get people together. Like this truly is getting into the bureaucratic weeds a little bit. Like, now we're having a poll to find the time for the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, whenever you have any more than 3 or 4 people and you have a lot of people running around doing different things, it's really hard to get them together. And so the article kind of talks about how hard meetings are to schedule, and then, you know, do we really need a face-to-face meeting, or can we just do like a Google Hangout? Like, it's something we have to stop what we're doing. Can we chat? Can we do it via Slack? You know, like, Slack is a big part of our company. I think it's helped prevent a lot of meetings. It's also a little bit of a distraction sometimes. So, but I am the anti-meeting guy. I just think that, like, if you look at the time, like like our executive team meetings, I did the math about like hourly rates and how often our executive team meets and things like that. And it costs us thousands of dollars a month to do this. And so every time we have a meeting where all of our executive team is there, I kind of think to myself, is this worth $500 an hour,
right?
To meet and to be everybody together. And sometimes that answer is unequivocally yes. But at the end of the day, like in education, meetings are not the answer. Meetings are often the problem. And often we don't have creative ways to disseminate information except by meeting face to face. And you know how that is. Like half the people are in their iPhones and the other half are kind of staring off into space. I just don't think it's overall. I've been through few meetings that I felt were productive uses of time. And I'm not trying to be arrogant. Like it's like I'm too cool for the room.
I think there's a balance though.
Yeah. Yeah. So do I. And I think that often like in education and obviously education startups in our case, sometimes we can go a little too far by like, hey, you know what we need to solve this problem? Another meeting. Let's meet about the meeting first, though, you know?
Right.
It just seems like they kind of build and they multiply like rabbits.
I do think education meetings are the worst. I mean, especially, you know, faculty meetings where it's like it's just scheduled every month, whether you have something to meet about or not. You know, those are they make you just feel like a bad person.
Well, something that we did a few months ago is that we ensured that all of our meetings had like an agenda. Like, here's what we're going to discuss,
and we're going to
blow through that list. Like, my goal is to get to that list in less than 30 minutes, unless something is definitely wrong, like, or something we really need to drill in. And I'll, you know, take liberties and kind of make an ad hoc change every now and then. But generally, we try to keep to the agenda. And that's what this article is talking about. It's like most meetings don't have an agenda. And like, it's just kind of crazy. Like in education, like if it's like a Title I meeting or something like that, then they have to have like a sign-in sheet for a meeting that happens during the day, like to prove that teachers were actually meeting at this meeting. Like,
right.
And then somebody has to keep that timesheet in case the feds come and audit them. And it's
right.
Like,
now it's a public record.
Yeah, it's nuts, right? Yeah. So I think the part of the article, the point of the article is like, you know, is it a necessary thing? Sure, it's a necessary evil, but it should be exceedingly rare to have to call a meeting with a bunch of folks in order to get your point across. I really think schools, like, I'm surprised more schools don't use Slack or other messaging
Slack's
technologies.
A great tool.
Slack's amazing, right? It's a productivity, like, multiplier, and I'm just surprised that more places don't use it.
For those listeners who don't know what Slack is, it's essentially it's a chat room. It's a bunch of chat rooms, but it's just done really well. And it was actually developed, I think, not necessarily by a developer, but somebody who had a degree in psychology. So he has this interesting perspective on how to communicate within the business. And I used it in my newsroom. I know my brother uses it at his restaurant. And I know you guys use it, Russ. And it just
heavily
makes sense.
It's far superior to email, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely. And we used it heavily in the newsroom, moving pictures, video, all sorts of stuff. Two things about meetings that jumped out at me. One is I remember reading an article in Inc.com, and it was about Elon Musk, and apparently he's, you know, very direct, and somebody was paraphrasing a story about him and having a meeting, but in the middle of the meeting, he looked over at somebody and said, "You haven't said anything. Why are you here?" And that's pretty harsh, but
sure.
It's also pretty true. It's like, why are you there? If you're just there to listen,
sure,
you know, so that's one thing. And also, I know Elon Musk is a big fan of the agenda, as you said. Another thing about meetings that I just loved. Have you heard Simon Sinek talk about the phone in the meeting, like beforehand? Have you heard this?
No, I haven't.
It's brilliant. I'm going to play it.
I'm reading a book of his right now, Leaders Eat Last.
Mm-hmm.
Have you read it?
No, I haven't.
I recommend it. It's really good. I'm only about three chapters in, but it's fantastic.
There should be no cell phones in conference rooms. None. Zero. And I don't mean the kind of like sitting outside waiting to text. I mean like when you're sitting and waiting for a meeting to start, this is what we all do. We all sit here and wait for the meeting to start. Meeting starting? Okay. And we start the meeting. No, that's not how relationships are formed. Remember we talked about it's the little things? Relationships are formed this way. We're waiting for a meeting to start and we go, "How's your dad? I heard he was in the hospital." "Oh, he's really good. Thanks for asking. He's actually at home now." "Oh, I'm really glad. It was really amazing." "I know, it was really scary for a while." That's how you form relationships. "Hey, did you ever get that report done?" "Oh my God, no, I didn't." "I'll help you out. Can I help you out with that?" "Really?" That's how trust forms. Trust doesn't form at an event, in a day. Even bad times don't form trust immediately. It's the slow, steady consistency. And we have to create mechanisms where we allow for those little innocuous interactions to happen. But when we allow cell phones in conference rooms, we just, okay, have the meeting. And then my favorite is like when there's a cell phone there and you go like this, you go. It rings, and you go, I'm not going to answer that. Mr. Magnanimous, you know?
What's your take on that? I mean, here you are, Russ. You run a software company. You believe in devices and cell phones. Do you kind of agree with them, though, or is that too much?
I believe in the humanizing effect of talking to people that work with you. And so, like, one of the tenets of our company is to treat people like humans. And I know that sounds kind of crazy, but often companies want to dehumanize people. And they want to, you know, kind of file things down to statistics. And we're a statistical company, so that's kind of a natural tendency of a lot of companies. But, like, we believe in engaging with folks on a human level, and we believe that people do business with people, not companies. And it's one of the reasons that we think we've been successful. And so, like, I do believe that you should be connected, but I think that Simon Sinek has a lot of good things to say about that. Like, connecting with somebody and asking them, and not just like as passing the time, but like legitimately, I'm interested in how your mother's doing. And I know she had a cancer scare or something like that, you know, like that is, I think that that is that he is absolutely correct. It's not the bad times that build trust. It's those times together whenever we're just like, you're around somebody all the time. It's like, I always use the analogy. It's like playing basketball. Like, basketball players are rarely looking at each other. They're usually looking at the ball, but they've always got kind of their hands kind of feeling where people are. And as you work with folks over time, your relationship needs to develop like that, where you're not having to, like, you know, engage all the time, but you're always in tune with where they are and what they're doing, just because you're always kind of micro-communicating. And I think that's maybe the point he was trying to get to.
You know, today was a big announcement. I don't know if you guys heard this morning, but Jeff Bezos is now the richest person in, was it the world or America? I know he surpassed Bill Gates. An announcement
came
down.
I did not see that.
Yeah.
I've been locked in a conference room all day. I kid you not.
Yeah, no, I got a push alert about it. Jeff Bezos is now the world's richest person, surpassing Bill Gates. That came from The Verge earlier today.
Obviously, that doesn't count sovereign wealth, right? So the Saudis and things like that, those are all excluded from the Forbes list, I think. So.
Oh, are they? I did not know that.
Yeah, absolutely. Like sovereign wealth, all that stuff. Like, yeah. You can't own a country that's worth trillions and trillions of dollars and be on the Forbes list. I think that's cheating.
That would be cheating if you're
born into it, I guess. But so good for Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, so kind of keeping in line there and tying it into education. Have you seen what they just are about to roll out? Or I think it is already rolled out. It just happened this week, and it's called Amazon Rapids. Are y'all familiar with this?
I think I saw something on it, but perhaps you could enlighten me.
Yes, it is about stories and kids, and they know that kids are going to be looking at the screen, as we've been talking about, but they've actually rolled out this thing where it tries to build stories into the screen. And probably the best way to describe it is it's almost like stories via text message. So it's like, I was watching a little video on their website.
Yuck! This swamp sludge never comes off, no matter how many times you wash.
Shh! Did you
hear
that?
And you can see, like, the exchange between characters, but it looks like a text message, and then it can actually read it aloud to you, or you can read it yourself.
Apparatus.
But it's just kind of a new way to tell a story, and then it's pretty neat, to be honest. They want money for it, of course, but...
Of course they do.
Is that something that you think you would even entertain with your child, Russ?
You know, we have actually, as connected as I am as a person, and nobody uses their cell phone as much as I do, we actually limit screen time significantly. Our daughter is 2 next month, and our daughter loves books. And she doesn't know a lot about, like, she knows the screen is a source of, you know, Little Mermaid or Trolls or something like that. We watched that on a plane recently. But I never thought I'd be the parent that would, I thought I'd be super engaged with, like, here's the screen, whatever. We find that our daughter's source of entertainment is books. And we read 10, 11, 12, 13 books every day, and often the same books over and over again. Like, don't think I'm buying 12, 13 books a day. But I do think that there's going to have to be a way to bridge kind of the – and this looks like – I just typed in rapids.amazon.com. This looks like exactly that. It looks like kind of a bridge between storybooks and a chat interface. It seems like they've got it pretty well fleshed out, and I don't doubt Amazon's ability to execute. I guess maybe I don't fully understand, like, this is aimed at kids and it's a story, but it's told in kind of a text message form, apparently.
Yeah, that seems to be the best way to describe it.
Yeah.
It looks to me like graphic novels are huge these days, you know, like especially, first through fifth graders really love graphic novels now. And there's a
what? Can somebody tell me what differentiates a graphic novel and a comic book? I know there are going to be people screaming at their radio with the answer, or their radio, listen to me, at their iPhone or Android device, but like, what's the difference?
Well, I mean, I guess we would need somebody probably better than me to answer that question. But
are you telling me you're not the expert on graphic novels?
I'm not the expert, because my boys were older than that wave that came through. Because I'm with you. It does appear to look, they both look like comic books, but I do think graphic novels have a lot more plot development and wording.
That's the difference, according to Google.
There's definitely chapters and... There's a lot more reading, but then a lot of images too. And so anyway, they've become so popular. Like I hosted the Scholastic Book Fair at our school this last year, and
nerd
that
alert.
Was the number. What
he said? Nerd alert!
Nerd alert! What? I was so excited. Oh my gosh! I can't. Okay, I have I was the number one sales in the state. Thanks.
How many pencils did you sell along with your Scholastic books? Do you guys remember that? Like, they used to have the book fair,
the
and then
posters.
You'd go into the library and you'd buy posters and erasers and
dogs.
Like, do you remember the smell of those erasers? I still remember the smell. Like,
yes.
So that's I'm not with
same.
You guys
it's
on the smell.
The
what's
like smell the, amazing? Like strawberry shortcake.
Yeah. Like they smell like
oh,
fruit.
Oh yes. I do remember those.
Like,
wow,
you know, like the sense of smell is like it bypasses your, like, there's a part of your brain, it's linked directly to a part of your brain
for
that,
nostalgia.
Like,
yeah,
for nostalgia. It's like whenever you smell something, it immediately takes you there. Like, your brain doesn't
that's
have to
a whole
look up
episode.
And remember that. Anyway, sorry.
No.
But like that smell, like it's like every time you smell Scotch tape, you think of Christmas, right? That's what I do anyway. So anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Nerd alert.
Yeah. Apparently Russ was an elf around Christmas. So.
Anyway.
Tell me you don't think of Christmas. That's
so
crazy.
When I hosted this Scholastic Book Fair, that was like the biggest shocker to me, was that we needed so many more graphic novels. That was like what we sold out of. We got more and we sold out of them again. Anyway, so it looks to me like this is kind of going, you know, taking a little page out of those graphic novels and bringing them to life, which I think it would be a big hit.
It's Google says, obviously, I said graphic novel versus comic. Mm-hmm. Google immediately replied, there's a very clear difference between the two. Like, kind of condescending. Graphic novels are much longer and tend to be much more complex, while comic books will tell a story over many issues. Graphic novels more often have their storylines wrapped up in only one or two books. So I think you're absolutely right.
Yes.
It seems like a kind of an uppity comic book.
They're cool. Yeah.
Like The Walking Dead was a graphic novel, right? Because it was a series and
it
like,
was,
that's where that came from.
And I did make the mistake of buying The Walking
Dead
comic
buy
book.
That.
I actually bought that for my son when he was, gosh, I want to say he was maybe 7 or 8.
Did it have a wrapper on it? Did you not flip through that a couple?
It didn't. Local comic book store downtown, and it was this cool field trip, and like all the kids were shopping at the end of the field trip, and he was like, this is the one I want. It has zombies. And I was like, oh, okay, let me see. And I looked, and I just kind of flipped through it, whatever. It wasn't until maybe a week or two later that
whatever your son is
Blake,
in therapy.
He came out of his room and he gave me the book and said, I don't think I'm supposed to have it.
Your kid out-parented you.
He did.
Here you go, Mom. That's a mulligan.
Said, why? It's yours. You can have it. And he was like, no, ma'am.
No, so, I'm not supposed to have this Harlequin romance novel.
And when I mentioned it to somebody else younger, you know, than me, I mentioned it to them. They were like, you gave him that? And they were like, do you even know what it's about? And I was like, zombies?
Wow.
So then the show came out later, and I was like, oh, and he's a huge fan of the show.
And the comic book is way more graphic, or the graphic novel is way more graphic than the show, even. Like, it is, it's awful.
Yeah. I got the Game of Thrones graphic novel for Isla that I'm reading too.
Oh, yeah, that's good. Yes, that's absolutely, that's a good place to start.
Yes, it's perfect for the 2-year-old. But the Amazon Rapids thing, I'm curious to see how it plays out. I think it's pretty clever price-wise. Whether or not I pay for it, I don't know. It's pretty cheap. Unlimited access, $2.99 for a month or $20.99 for a year.
Where's the content coming from? Is it like the Amazon Shorts or whatever they do on Kindle that are like, you know, user-created, or are they actually generating this from... You know,
they're calling it signature stories, which tells me that they're making it as they go.
Sure.
And it says like they do have some stuff with like some folks from Saturday Night Live, I think, doing some voiceovers, and then like the voice from the guy from SpongeBob.
So it's like rich media, right?
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah. And so so it is going to be unique, and how good it is, that's to be determined. You know, this was not planned, but it makes the perfect segue. for our Bright Idea segment.
Oh, there you go.
Our guest actually has created an aquarium that models the Amazon River. No joke. And that was not intended, but really interesting stuff. This is an 1,100-gallon aquarium. Are you guys ready to hear about this?
Let's do it.
Our guest in today's Bright Idea segment is a teacher out of Houston, Texas, that was recently featured on Upworthy.com for creating an aquarium at his high school that is far from your typical aquarium. James Gibran managed to bring an 1,100-gallon aquarium to Alif Elsick High School, and the photos of the aquarium are incredible. James, welcome to the show.
Hey, Nick. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
You know, this we're not really in a visual medium on this show, so I'm going to ask you to do me a favor and help me draw a picture for anybody listening of what this aquarium is like, because it really is fantastic.
Sure. The entire aquarium from top to bottom, including the cabinetry, stands 12 feet long, 9 feet tall, and 3 feet wide. The aquarium itself, just the glass with the water inside of it, is 4 feet tall, 3 feet wide, and 12 feet long. So it's a huge aquarium, and I've been looking for something in any school that's this size, and I've yet to find something quite as big.
So specifically, what type of fish are in this aquarium?
Right now, we have some red hook. They're a piranha family fish. They're a omnivorous member of the piranha family, so they eat plant matter, but primarily vegetarian. We have a few of those in there. We have a few what are called green terrors. They're a member of the cichlid family that are found in the Amazon. They're actually really beautiful fish. And right now I have a couple threadfin geophagus, which are another member of the cichlid family, the South American cichlid family, and they're really colorful and really beautiful.
Why do this? Like, why an aquarium, and why was that so important to you?
Well, I teach aquatic science and environmental science at Elsick High School. I've been trying really hard to get my kids out to look at large bodies of water, and just due to safety issues and logistics, I haven't been able to get those kids out to the places I want to go to. So I figured, why not bring large bodies of water to my students at the school itself? So I wrote a grant. It was sponsored through State Farm Insurance. It's called the Neighborhood Assist Program. And I wrote the grant with the help of our district competitive grant writer, Zach Ward. It was for $25,000. And State Farm took 2,000 applicants and narrowed it down in-house to 200. And then those 200 were voted on by the public, and the top 40 received a $25,000 grant. And I was lucky enough, with the support of my students, to come in eighth place, and we got that money. So we put it to work, and we built a large, large Amazon River-themed aquarium that has native fish that are found in the Amazon River.
And so what's the upkeep like and the undertaking like to actually bring this online? Like, talk to me about the timeline and so forth.
Well, going into it, I knew it was going to be a lot of upkeep and a lot of time. I'm starting to really figure out how much that actually is. And it's a little more than I was expecting, but it's not unmanageable. But luckily, part of the curriculum for my students in the aquatic science class is the upkeep and maintenance of aquariums. So it's going to be incorporated into the curriculum, and my kids will be an integral part in the upkeep and cleaning of it. So it's going to be an adventure. We just got it in place in November. It took a while to get the water, you know, in the right ranges for the fish to survive. We got our first batch of fish in, and our second batch of fish in will be coming in the next week or so. So
you got the money. And then you probably had a conversation. There had to have been a conversation with your principal of you having to sell it to them. Because, again, this is heavy. Where do you put it? How'd that go?
Yeah. So, I mean, the tank as it stands right now is around 13,000 pounds, everything included into it. So it's huge. We had people come out to look at the foundation to make sure it would be able to support the weight. I had the conversation with my principal when I first submitted the application to the grant. And she loved the idea, Tina Elsie. She's been a really big supporter of the project. I haven't had really any pushback from anybody in the district level or the school level, and they've all been very supportive.
What's the feedback been like from the students?
You know, I get kids that I've never even talked to, never even seen before at my school. We have 4,000 students at my school. And I have kids come up to me, hey, you're the aquarium guy, aren't you? Oh, it's so awesome. So, I mean, when I hear that stuff, I just love it. And my students themselves, they were so just excited. They were constantly asking and making sure that we were going to have the tank up and fish in it before they graduated this past year. And I was like, yes, absolutely. Don't worry, guys. And it was ready to go before they graduated and left the school.
So I'm sure there's probably some educators out there listening to this, and they're just like, this is too big of a project to take on. Like, why? Like, what would you say to the people who are kind of naysayers about that?
Well, it is a huge project, and it takes a lot of commitment from myself, my students, and my team members. I have a couple other teachers that teach aquatic science, and they're going to be very supportive in the project, and I'll have to lean on them a little bit too at times. But as long as you have a good support system and you have the drive to take on a project like this, it's well within reach and possibilities of undertaking it.
So this summer, have you been just kind of visiting the fish on a daily basis? How's that work?
I've been up there a lot this summer, just making sure my water pH and salinity and everything else that goes into it is balanced. Just before school got out, we had some issues with the water balancing out, so I was fighting that for a bit. But over the last month, I've got it really dialed in. It's the system right now is running as well as I could have hoped it ever to run. So, but yeah, it's taken some time out of my summer, but thankfully, it's something I enjoy. So I'm up there once every week, really.
The aquarium is in a place that's kind of a high traffic area, right?
Yeah, it's actually we have two cafeterias because our school is so big, and it's in the north cafeteria where everybody can see it. Anybody who wants to come in, they can view it.
What lesson plans have you been able to build around the aquarium?
So my end goal is for my students this year, now that the aquarium will be fully stocked of fish, is to have my students learn about the Amazon ecosystem, learn about the fish in those systems, and learn how the entire system operates as a whole, take that information, become experts on it, and then extend invitations to the elementary, middle school students of our district to come on many field trips where they'll be able to come, view the aquarium, and have my students teach them about the same things that they were learning.
Yeah, that's really cool that you guys actually have a plan to touch more than just one class here. I mean, you could actually reach out and touch thousands of kids potentially, right, with a district of your size.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in our district, we have, oh man, I don't remember how many kids we have. We have a lot of kids, though. The real reason why I did this is we teach in an inner city setting where a lot of these students, they grow up and they don't get to really get outside of this environment that they live in and see the natural world, see wild places, wild waters. So I wanted to really be able to introduce them to that and give them the opportunities that I had growing up where I was in the woods, in the lakes, out at the beach. I wanted them to be able to experience that and have the same passions for that part of science that I learned to have, and hopefully go on to become stewards of those wild places and become interested in pursuing careers in science and college.
I read that you actually have even greater ambitions beyond this aquarium. Do you still have those ambitions?
So yeah, I do. I recently applied for another grant, which was $100,000. I'm waiting to hear back from that. And I'm hoping to be able to put a matching saltwater aquarium in the other cafeteria. So fingers crossed on that one.
What would you say to somebody who's thinking about doing this? Like, what type of person or teacher does it take to be able to pull this off?
You gotta love being able to care for an aquarium. If you don't like taking care of your 10-gallon aquarium in your home, then it's definitely not the project for you. However, there are other ways to go around that. If you have the funding to be able to hire someone to do the maintenance on it, mm-hmm. you can still build lessons and curriculum around the animals and the environment that you create. So if you have the funding, it's a little easier on that side.
Now that it's basically up and running, what has your principal said to you or your administrator said to you about the project?
She's loving it. We just had actually a meeting, she had a meeting at the school where all the administration from all the different schools in the district met at my school, and she asked me to come in and get the lights on it at that for those particular times so the guests could see it, which was a great opportunity because I'll be extending those exact same administrators' invitations later this year for their kids to come out. So I shook hands and talked to a few administrators, and she loves it. My principal, Miss Elsie, she's a big fan of it, which helps me out a lot.
That's great. There's definitely a lot to be proud of there, and I definitely wish you the best of luck with it. So you're ready for our pop quiz, right?
I hope so.
All right. First question. If students could only go to school for one subject, which subject would it be?
Oh, man. One subject? English.
Why is that?
I think the ability to read and write opens up doors to any of the other courses that you could ever be interested in.
What are we not teaching in school that we should be teaching?
In general, I think we're losing sight of communication with one another, the ability to collaborate with one another.
You think technology's at fault for that, or?
I think technology is great, but I think technology is taking away a lot of those interpersonal skills that we really need for the workforce and for ourselves.
What does every child deserve?
Every child deserves to be in a place where they feel safe. It's a really big thing that we focus on at our school and our district, really, is just having kids feel safe.
Biggest challenge for today's educators?
I think keeping up with the curve of technology, especially for the teachers who have been teaching for a little more, few more years than some of the newer teachers. I think it's a real big challenge for them is just being able to incorporate technology because it is an important thing for our students to learn.
What's the best gift to give an educator?
I think, honestly, just a little thank you note saying thank you.
What career path would you take if you couldn't be in education?
Probably wildlife biology.
What teacher changed your life?
My 10th grade world history teacher, Stephen Castle. He really challenged me. I was kind of a difficult student in high school, and he challenged me and kind of turned me around educationally.
Do you buy your school lunch or bring your own?
I have a bad habit of going and buying takeout, but I've been bringing mine a lot more often.
That's nice. Yeah, if you got time to, if you're close to something at your school, yeah, you can run over there. And
it's so unhealthy, though. I hate doing it.
And expensive. You're right. What do you do on your planning period? I have a hunch what you're probably doing on your planning period.
Taking care of my aquarium. But I'm also team lead for the upper level science, so I'm meeting with my team members and discussing future lessons and whatnot.
Excellent. Pen or pencil? It's the last question.
Pencil, hands down.
All right, James. Again, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us. We really appreciate it, and hopefully, some other folks out there will be inspired by your story with the aquarium and try to do the same thing.
Nick, I really appreciate you having me on, and thank you for your time.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Do it for episode 10 of Class Dismissed. We want to hear from you, so if you want to send us an idea or comment, remember that you can email us at info@classdismissedpodcast.com. We're here to support educators, but we need your support as well. So if you like what you've heard today, please be sure and subscribe to the show. We'd also love it if you'd leave us a 5-star review. Those are what keep us going. Don't forget you can connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/classdismissedpodcast or on Twitter. Just search for us by typing in Class Dismissed. On behalf of Russ with School Status and Lissa representing all the teachers out there. I'm Nick Ortego, and I'll talk with you next week.